This is Fourth Estate Radio News with Bruce Birch. Seattle, Washington has just become the latest in a string of cities that has turned down bidding on hosting the 2008 GOP convention. Chicago and San Diego have also passed on the convention. Despite a report and call by the UN for closing the U.S. Military Detention Center at Guantanamo Bay, apparently a new wing is presently being constructed there. Most of Guantanamo's detainees are in open-air cells made of chain-link fence with a metal roof, or simple barracks where up to 10 cooperative men are allowed to live together. But some are in a new modern facility that cost more than $30 million to build and looks like it is there for the long term. Known as Camp 5, this apparently is the model for the newly being constructed Camp 6. Prosecutors on Friday asked that former Representative Randy Duke Cunningham be sentenced to the maximum of 10 years in prison for his stunning betrayal of the public trust by accepting bribes. Cunningham, 64, resigned from Congress last year after pleading guilty to accepting $2.4 million in bribes, including a Rolls-Royce, yachts, homes, and antique furnishings in exchange for defense contracts and other favors. More than a quarter million homes and businesses still lacked power across the Northeast today as temperatures plummeted following a storm with hurricane-force wind gusts that was blamed for 4 deaths. Wind was still blowing at about 30 miles per hour throughout the region Saturday. On Friday, the Weather Service reported wind of more than 60 miles per hour that buffeted the Rochester area, and a 77-mile-per-hour gust was recorded at the city's airport. This has been Bruce Birch for Fourth Estate Radio.
Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Sometimes you just know that whatever you're hearing from the news is so completely disconnected from reality, or worse, anything even remotely resembling reality, that you just want to run into a cave somewhere and hibernate until it's safe to come out again. That's how I felt for the last few years, but especially so in the last few days, because what's been going on is a perfect microcosm of how things have happened since this administration took office. It always begins with the revelation that the administration has screwed something up or done something illegal. Then we get to watch the so-called professional media bend over backwards to try and downplay it or just blame it on a Democrat. It's like watching people trying to put out a fire by throwing themselves on it. You see it and you just can't believe it's happening. These people are clearly uncomfortable saying bad things about Republicans, and what I'd like to know is what's in it for them. Do they really believe they're trying to be fair and balanced, or are they just concerned about keeping their jobs? And while they're all in this feeding frenzy, the bloodshed goes on in Iraq, and other important news stories are going unnoticed. It's pretty clear to this observer that the media is not now, nor has it been for many years, an objective transmitter of truth. They are, either willfully or through negligence or incompetence, accomplices in the crimes of this administration. And if the opportunity presents itself, they ought to be punished alongside them. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard for this week's edition of Fourth Estate Radio. My name is John Fox here in Sydney, and over across the other side of the planet is my mate, Bruce Birch. How you doing, Bruce?
I'm doing great, John, and how are you tonight on this fine Saturday evening? Well, I guess it's Sunday for you, but we're still on Saturday here, buddy.
Yeah, you'll catch up in about an hour on your coast, I reckon. So, you know, we've had like an insane week personally with things going on with our show, things behind the scenes and whatnot. So when we were getting together today to start doing prep for this, we were a bit frazzled, but I think we got it together just in the nick of time.
Frazzled would not be the word. I'm thinking more like pulling our hair out. Anyway, now we you know what, this show has, putting this thing together has been a lesson, I think, in patience. What do you think, John?
Yeah, something like that for sure. But, I'll tell you, man, there's been a lot of big stuff going on this week, and I actually have for the show this week. We have our first report on T-Terror legislation that was just passed here, coming from our good, mate, Lori Irvin from, Townsville, up in the beautiful state of Queensland. And he's got a package for us that we'll be running a little bit later in the show. And I also have some audio from another program called Media Watch down here, where they cover a little bit in hindsight. You may remember me speaking about some raids that we had here, anti-terror raids, that I said were all theater.
Yes.
Well, I have a little bit of interesting audio from the wonderful ABC's snarky 12-minute program that pops up once a week, and I think everybody will enjoy that. And aside from that, the other audio that I have is from a Dateline program earlier this week. Now, this is not the thing about the new terror photos. This is actually about the coal mafia over here. And our wonderful producer, Bob Kincaid, would definitely be interested in this. seems as though the Australian coal industry refers to themselves as the mafia. And I have some audio about the Bush administration getting in the way and silencing scientists over here and how the games are played in very similar fashion. But and as usual, we're chatting in the Tom Hartman chat room. You go to Tom with an H and two N's and click on the chat link, and some of the greatest minds to chat away and spend some time with are in the radio.com. And Bruce Birch, what do you have from this week?
Well, I've got, we've got all kinds of stuff going on this week. We're going to talk about, we're going to go full circle this week in our Occupation Watch segment and talk a little bit about what's going on here within the United States with occupation, with the military occupation of the Bush regime, I should say. Also we're going to be talking about some our good friend, Deadeye Dick. So, but before we do all that,
audio that I wanted this week but didn't have time to get, didn't I?
Didn't have time. Well, okay, yeah. Well, maybe we'll make that available on the website later on. We'll see. We also want to just sort of mention that we do have a fundraiser. I want to mention Ben Birch is doing a fundraising drive over at White Rose Society, and this stream is carried by him. So if you feel so inclined to go over there and make a donation, please do. He can use all the help he can get. We are also doing a fundraising drive with Fourth Estate Radio to try to build some infrastructure with what we're doing here and get John off the phone and get me off the phone so we can have a crystal clear show to present to you each and every Saturday.
Yeah, no doubt. But, we got some response last week, and that was great.
Yes, we did.
Some of it seemed to be almost instantaneous. And you just have to love the internet and when you have friends on the internet.
Which internet would that be? Would that be the AB or the CD internet, John?
I don't know. I just turn it on and it all works. But anyway.
it's the internet. But thank you so much to everyone who has donated thus far. And if you'd like to be a part of that, you can go to fourthestateradio.com. And right there on the front page, you will see a post about our fundraising drive. So do check that out. And if you feel so inclined, we can definitely use the help. Also, if you'd like to dial into the program this evening, you can do so by dialing 1-304-658-3333. That's 1-304-658-3333. You can also email us by sending an email to John, that's J-O-N, at fourthestateradio.com. That's where the complaints go. No. Okay. Not exactly. But if you'd like to get in touch with us that way, you know, we'll check out your emails and we can probably bring some of those on air also. But that's 1-304-658-3333, 1-304-658-3333. John, you want me to go ahead and bring up our first little story of the evening?
Please do, mate. Please do.
Well, I just thought it was interesting. There's a couple of little funny little stories this week that I wanted to talk about. I just think are just absolutely, interesting, I guess is the best way to put it. The first one is that apparently the GOP is having a very tough time finding a place for their convention for 2008. Seattle is the latest city. I think it's the third largest. It's the third in a series of the third of three large cities that have turned down bidding on that process. The first two, I think Chicago turned the GOP down last week, and then also San Diego declined wanting to be involved in that. So, you know, what we're seeing, I think, is that people are scared to death that riots are going to break out or something. I don't know.
New York City lost a bundle on the last one.
They lost a bundle.
Anytime the president shows up anywhere, it costs a fortune for the security details and the clearing of streets of the homeless and all that other kind of stuff that has to go on. And that's not, as far as I know, that bill has to be, you know, footed by the city who's hosting the president. And I remember that there was a lot of mess during the RNC, and you also had situations where the police were being given orders to go and detain people under dubious circumstances during the Republican National Convention. I have a feeling that a lot of police in cities around the country may not want to get in between the people and, you know, this administration, really.
Well, you know, I think also in the article that I read about Seattle, they also mentioned that part of the reasoning for declining was the WTO meeting that happened there, I think in 2000, that created such a firestorm of controversy with tear gassing of protesters and just the Gestapo-like tactics. So I guess they're prepared to do a GOP convention, but I think maybe if they do have it in Seattle, you know, they'll have to arrest the attendees of the convention rather than those who are protesting. That's what I'm thinking. you know, because that's where all the criminals will be. They'll be inside the convention center rather than outside, in my view. But
now that's where the organized criminals are, at least.
Yeah, the organized criminals, exactly. The other thing that I wanted to bring up this week is that, or you know, just a little thing off to the side, is that apparently the police state is ever increasing of late, with the police chief of Houston, Texas, now coming out and saying that he wants to put surveillance cameras in apartment complexes, downtown streets, shopping malls, and even private homes to fight crime during a shortage of police officers. And he's quoted as saying, John, he's quoted as saying, this is Chief Harold Hurt, he's quoted as saying, I know a lot of people are concerned about Big Brother, but my response to that is, if you're not doing anything wrong, why should you worry about it?
Mate, I'm tired of people not wanting to have the discussion that you need to have. That's not the point. I mean, that is not the point at all. I mean, we have rights. Inalienable rights in America that say that they're not allowed to do this without a warrant. And, you know, when you suddenly bring in, you know, private homes, where does this come from? I mean, you know, I can see, you know, fudging reality a bit on what's right and wrong with public places and streets and intersections, but what's going to happen the first time they say, oh, well, because we don't have enough cops around, we're going to stick a camera in your house?
He's saying that building permits should require malls and large apartment complexes to install surveillance cameras, and if a homeowner requires repeated police response, it is reasonable, he says, to require camera surveillance of the property.
It is a way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's completely radical and extreme and absolutely violates the Fourth Amendment's protections against unreasonable search and seizure, or searches at least.
I mean, if I've ever seen just, you know, like, you know, to use a bad terminology, but a quail shooting a bucket, you know, I mean, there's no basis for any of it, you know, what, because you may have needed assistance more often than somebody else, you now are suspect? Like, I mean, the logic doesn't work.
Well, and not only that, but I think what we're finding is that, you know, in this society where we have created this atmosphere of fear rather than atmosphere of working together, you know, everybody, you know, you have to watch out for everyone. It's like everyone else, if you don't know them, is suspect for, you know, committing some sort of harmful act. And, you know, it starts at the very top. I believe it starts at the very top with George W. Bush. You know, was quoted as saying recently that he awakes every morning trying to figure out how the terrorists are going to attack us again. And if you're coming from that paradigm, you're coming from that place of fear, then, you know, obviously the rest of the country is going to follow suit.
Yeah, I mean, if you equate everything down to a risk factor and a threat level, all your reactions are going to be in some sort of defensive form. So I really just don't see how you can, you know, it's just, sorry, it's asinine thinking. You know, it's asinine thinking to think that, you know, we should allow ourselves to, you know, have this kind of thing put upon us just because they can't do their jobs. I don't understand this at all. But anyway, we're coming first segment hearing some music, I do believe.
Yeah, so, we're coming up on a break.
It's about 6 minutes after the hour. Bruce and I will be back shortly after this break and a couple of messages with more of today's top stories on Fourth Estate Radio.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I have watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Hi, my name is Joanne, and I have mannequinism. Well, I did have it, but I'm not a mannequin anymore. Doctors said over 75% of my body turned into plastic. They said it's because I wasn't active in my community, because I didn't vote or volunteer or I don't know. All I wanted to do was cry, but I couldn't because I had plastic eyes.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Right. that sound of Frank Zappa playing us back in Muscle Man Segment 2 of Georgia State Radio. And Bruce Birch, we were kind of talking about, you know, surveillance and infringement of rights stories and whatnot. What else do you have on your plate for this first part of our show?
Well, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about Cheney as well. you know, he's been done to death. And we were talking about a little bit about the surveillance thing. Well, it's also my belief that we need to look at the situation with Dick Cheney. And I mean, he is a good part, I believe, John, of what's been driving this administration. And it is amazing to me how this whole situation with him has been covered up. I mean, let me just read you this first part of the story. This is off of the AP wire now. The AP is saying this, okay? Vice President Dick Cheney said he didn't immediately disclose his hunting accident because he wanted the confusing details to come out right. Instead, authorized accounts came out slowly and often still wrong. The result? A week of shifting blame, belatedly acknowledged beer consumption, not zero drinking after all, and evolving discrepancies in how the shooting happened, its aftermath, and the way it was told to the nation. Corporate damage control specialist Eric Desenhall says, there's a reason why they call this crisis management, and that's because it's a mess.
Hey, man, did you happen to catch Al Franken on, I think it was Scarborough Country or whatever the bloody hell that thing is, a couple nights ago, talking about this very issue?
I did not.
Well, I tell you, it was really interesting because I know Al and Scarborough come from two very, very different places politically, but they were totally on the same page with the fact that we wouldn't be having this conversation about there being so much question about what went down if there hadn't been the 14-hour gap, right? And the White House tried to say that the press was angry because some little paper got the story, and that wasn't why they were angry. And they weren't really, you know, it didn't matter who got the story. The point was, is the fact that, yes, okay, the Secret Service did contact the police, but then when the sheriffs tried to go and talk to Cheney, they were pushed off and given the runaround for 14 hours until they could get their story straight. Now, Al made the, you know, just kind of threw in, you know, said, you know, now, I've never shot. And, you know, Scarlett says, I'm a young man, but they're still talking yet. And he says, now, if there was question about the severity of what happened, wouldn't that mean even more that you would go to the hospital, that you would be talking with the authorities? You know, if there was question on whether this guy was going to survive, you know, his whole line about, oh, there wasn't enough room for me in the van. Well, I'm sorry. He's got that, you know, entourage and bloody, you know, his own, I don't know, he's probably got handmaidens for all we know. But you know that there was an extra van around for him to jump onto and you know, go down there. So, I mean, if he actually gave a damn, I think the guy has actually a soul, you know, what Franken was saying, goes, if this happened to us, we'd be at the hospital, man. We would be there.
Yeah.
You know? And if he had gone to the hospital and if he had talked to the sheriffs when they rocked up, we would never be having this conversation.
Catherine Armstrong. And now, what amazes me is that Cheney has, you know, and I don't, gosh almighty, I guess it's, look, we're going to do this one little segment on this, and then we're going to go on to other stuff, because everyone has done this guy to death, you know, and that's not a threat.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Armstrong, who is the ranch owner, approved by Cheney to disclose the accident, said that the vice president did everything right. That Whittington should have shouted that he was rejoining the hunting group after drifting off to retrieve a downed bird. That mistake exposed him to getting shot, she says. It's incumbent on him. So basically, the shootee is now being blamed for being shot. That's what Catherine Armstrong is saying.
She must live full part and parcel in opposite world, man.
You know? Again, I mean, all of them do.
If this were any other citizen, man, you know, we would be locked up for having not reported it.
Exactly.
Regardless of whether we were guilty for whatnot, you know, because you know it's like you know a drive-by accident with your car, you know, even if no one died or anything, if you've fled the scene, you are guilty of a crime there. You know, I mean, there are certain instances where you're duty bound by law to, you know, any gun accident must be, you know, and you know, I know we've done this to death, and I don't want to carry it too much more. But you know, if anybody has an opinion on any of this, you know, or anything else, don't forget to ring us at 304-658-3333, 304-658-3333. And we might come back and listen to some of that audio about the coal thing with me. You know, it's all just about the disclosure issues. The same thing, isn't it? You know, not
it is. You know, these people have tried to manage information so much that it is now managing them, I think, is the problem. The other thing that I was, you know, that I wanted to mention about this is that it's my firm belief that the universe hates these people, John. these things happen. Excuse me. These things happen. And it's like totally anomalous kind of stuff, and it's like happening out of nowhere. And I believe it's the result of the damage that they have done to the rest of the universe and throughout their, you know, the last 5, 6 years. But, you know.
And I agree with you. You know, once you've told so many lies, you kind of run into a problem where you can't stop telling lies. And just like this scene says, you know, it's a world of confusion, and that's what they want, is a world of confusion. So we got to take this break. It's about 20 minutes, 28 minutes past the hour, and we will see you on the other side of this half-hour break, and you're listening to Fourth State Radio.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told you that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel. Not only their feed, small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more EcoWrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
It's Grace.
We're actually very boring people, Rama. That's why we call ourselves homebodies.
Well, it's Rama.
Sure. I mean, yeah, you know, group sex for us is when we're both involved.
That's a
It's really, really smart.
Worked the
shoe
leather.
We're a nice little Petri dish here in Vermont because you can experiment.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the web at homebodies.ramabahama.net.
Pablo Escobar, trained at the School of the Americas. Another day making hay up in Hollywood.
Everybody, welcome back to For the Space Radio, and I'm John Fox, still in Sydney, Australia, and over on the other side of the planet is my buddy Bruce. Bruce, you still with me?
I'm still with you, John, and with everyone else.
Right on. Hey, everybody, don't forget we're chatting at the Tom Hartman chat room. You can ring in on 3333, and I'm going to take over things here a little bit, Bruce, and I want to get into this first bit of audio, if I could. Bob, if you get that bit on the silenced scientist thing, and earlier this week they ran this really, really great piece on the ABC, and it was basically called The Coal Mafia, and we'll have links available on the blog a little bit later. But basically, everything that we've always assumed is going on over in the United States with corporate control, basically writing legislation for environmental policy and whatnot, is pretty well a given for those of us that pay attention. Well, it's just as bad here, man. There's about 5 minutes of audio here, and so I had trouble getting a even smaller clip. Now, this is about halfway into the program, and Bob, just roll it and let everybody just get a piece and just sit and absorb this. You'll hear about the CSIRO, which is basically kind of, and everything's going to parallel everything you know that goes on in the United States. Go ahead and roll it, man.
While industry players claim to have the inside running on greenhouse policy, the scientific experts say they're being silenced. Calls for reducing greenhouse emissions are landing some of the world's leading scientists in trouble. Last month in the US, NASA's chief climate change scientist claimed the Bush administration was trying to stop him from speaking out after he called for cuts. And as Four Corners will reveal tonight, leading Australian scientists claim they are being gagged too.
Minister, would it concern you if some scientists in this country claim they were being gagged from the public debate on climate change?
I would say anyone who claims that would say that's untrue. I mean, there's not a day goes by where scientists in Australia are not making, you know, very good contributions to a very vigorous debate.
What about if it reflects badly on government policy? Does that matter? Are they free to say whatever they like?
Absolutely. I mean, I'd give me an example of where a scientist is not allowed to say what they want.
How many times were you censored?
Oh, that's difficult to answer. I mean, I think that at least a half a dozen times over the last year that I was with CSIRO.
Thank you very much, Bryson.
Dr. Graham Pearman has taken the lead in speaking out on climate change in Australia for many years.
A massive reduction of the ice cap.
But it was this, he says, that got him into trouble late in his career at the nation's major scientific institute, the CSIRO.
What we get from our fundamental understanding of the system.
Dr. Pearman talked publicly about the need to have targets to drastically cut emissions in order to slow down global warming.
Warmest year for us.
As far as I can see, it was CSIRO being enormously frightened of the idea that anyone in government might interpret a piece of information that I was communicating from the basis of scientific knowledge as being critical of government policy.
It shows that actually the frequency of tropical storms, including hurricanes, has not changed, but the frequency of Category 4 and 5, the most extreme, has gone up by about 100%. And so we can...
Dr. Pearman says he came under pressure after joining the Australian Climate Change Group, which was convened by the Worldwide Fund for Nature and the insurance company IAG. It invited several scientists and academics to help it release a report on what could be done to combat climate change. It recommended a 60% reduction in emissions by 2050 and trading in
in greenhouse gas emissions.
Part of the country.
Were you restricted from talking publicly about emission reductions in general?
Yes, I was. I think it's an organisation, it's a CSIRO that is very afraid that there may be consequences to their bottom line if they, in fact, are seen to be interfering with government policy.
But talking about the need for a reduction in emissions and how much would be a safe level, is that really about government policy? Isn't that about good science?
Well, I believe it is, and as I say, I think that for 30 years, all I've tried to do is to convey to the community and to sectors of the community what good science suggests is the way forward.
He's very free to talk about options for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. That's exactly what we're encouraging our staff to do. When it comes to being specific about which proportion of reduction by which date, that is clearly a policy prescription, and that clearly intrudes upon the role of government.
Dr. Pearman received several warnings, including one in an email from a senior manager at the CSIRO. He doesn't know if the orders came direct from management sensitive about offending the government or from government to the CSIRO.
I was told that I couldn't say anything that indicated that I disagreed with current government policy, and I presume that meant federal government policy. And as I said, I tried to reiterate that in fact the document that we had prepared and any public statement that I made was a partisan statement, and that it did not refer to any particular government.
What types of things were you told not to say publicly?
Well, I was told not to, for example, be involved in a statement that says that Australia should have, in the view of this group, a carbon trading scheme. I was told that I could not be involved in setting a target, because both target setting this is for future levels of carbon dioxide emissions, both target setting and the concept of there being carbon trading were not current government policy was industry.
Right. So, Bruce, there you're hearing that, just like we heard, we keep hearing that you basically have that good science is can criticism, as opposed to just being good science. And, I'm looking forward to getting very possibly a couple of the people involved in this story on the show in the next couple of weeks. I did get a response from the ABC saying that they would be glad to see what contacts they can make for us, and I didn't have time to make those contacts before today's show, but if you go to the Four Corners website, which is at abc.com.au, you can see a transcript of it there. I'm trying to get a copy of the program to put online somewhere, because that was only basically one, part of one segment, and the whole thing is just loaded with, it's with such specifics on the way that this whole thing's being, manipulated. Environmental policy is being completely manipulated, and I'm going to just kind of leave it there a little bit by segueing into this, which came out of the Washington Post this week, okay? You can get this at the 12th Harmonic blog. And we found that Washington Post says, Greenland glaciers are melting into the sea twice as fast as previously believed, the result of a warming trend that renders obsolete predictions of how quickly Earth's oceans will rise over the next century, scientists said yesterday. The new data comes from satellite imagery and gives fresh.
John, are you there? Okay, it appears we have lost John there, Bob, or you've lost me, one of the two. Okay.
I've got you, Bruce, in finding John.
Okay. All right, well, we were talking about a story out of Greenland, or we were talking about that Greenland's glaciers are melting in the sea twice as fast as previously believed, the result of a warming trend that renders obsolete predictions of how quickly Earth's oceans will rise over the next century. The new data comes from satellite imagery and gives fresh urgency to worries about the role of human activity in global warming. The Greenland data are mirrored by findings from Bolivia to the Himalayas, noting that the rising sea levels threaten widespread flooding and severe storm damage in low-lying areas worldwide. The scientists said they do not yet understand the precise mechanism causing glaciers to flow and melt more rapidly, but they said that the changes in Greenland were unambiguous and accelerating. In 1996, the amount of water produced by melting ice in Greenland was about 90 times the amount consumed by Los Angeles in a year. Last year, the melted ice amounted to 225 times the volume of water that the city uses annually. So you know, what we're finding is that, you know, obviously the science is there. The science is there. And, you know, try as they might, the Bush administration cannot duck this issue or dive on this issue much more. You know, so we're finding, you know, absolutely that you know, as we just heard in that story in Australia, you know, one of the things too that I wanted to mention is that apparently Australia and the U.S. is sort of creating their own Kyoto Protocol. John, are you back with me?
Yeah, man, I'm back. Sorry about that. Our equipment that fundraising is all about just kind of, you know, cut me off. But I'm back.
Well,
anyway,
John, before you go too far into that, I already sort of read the story that you had and was commenting a little bit on that. So if you want to pick up from there.
Well, I mean, it's just become when we saw a report from the BBC on, I believe it was SBS television down here, where they had some graphics showing about how they believe this is actually happening. Why it is that the glacier, the largest glacier face, is moving so much more rapidly. And what the graphic showed, and what they're not 100% sure, but it's looking pretty good, is because of rising air temperatures, you end up with these melting pockets within the glacier face. And then what happens is that you end up almost getting like a little melted spot where you end up having liquid water draining down below the glacier between it and the actual Earth face. And there's now more water in between the Earth face and the glacier, acting as a lubricant, which is making it move at an alarmingly quick rate. And it's been accelerating dramatically over the last 3 or 4 years, I believe what they were showing. And it's just absolutely undeniable. It's really looking more like, by some of the more recent studies, that we could be hitting that kickover point with our environment here in the next 10 to 20 years if we don't do something absolutely drastic.
Well, I think it's interesting now that and, you know, I don't want to bring this back to Bush too much, but, you know, bottom line is he has been mentioning a lot over the last few weeks about moving to nuclear power and away from using hydrocarbons, as he calls them, petroleum-based products. You know.
Yeah. Well.
Go ahead.
Okay. There was another program on just this week, and I believe it was The End of the World as We Know It, and it was another BBC-ish kind of thing where a guy went to Chernobyl. And even Friends of the Earth in the UK are having to talk about nuclear as possibly best of all evils band-aid. Because a couple of the leading scientists think that we're already past the point. And at this point, if we pull, unless we go to something that goes to zero emissions, it's all over already. And not that it is the cure, but until we're able to finally mass produce, he said, if you look at the numbers game with what happened in Chernobyl and whatnot, it's still, by the numbers, very safe. And a gentleman who actually still lives near the Chernobyl site and has basically put his own life on the line to see what the after effects are, said, okay, you have a choice. Go green and have nothing, like none of our technology or anything, or make the move, you know, even though he lived through this hell, you know, and I'm kind of seeing even where Friends of the Earth have said, yes, they disagree with that type of power on principle. But maybe the talking has to shift slightly, because unless we use a Band-Aid of some sort that gets us to zero carbon emissions, we might just be screwed.
Yeah. Well,
and,
you know,
I hate to be really doomsday about it, but, you know, Gail and I really cover, you know, I mean, 12th Harmonic, our blog, you know, we say it's a green left blog. And, you know, really, really the green part is, you know, the more important part, because I think it's key to every other thing that we talk about. We don't have a planet to live on. We got nothing. So we're just, I hear the music coming in, Bruce, so we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with the Occupation Watch. It is now looking like it's coming up on 47 minutes past the hour, and you'll be back with John and Bruce on Fourth Estate Radio.
Fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma, because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Yes, I do. Thank you, John, for bringing this in there. It is about 10 minutes before the hour, and I, you know, when we do our Occupation Watch segment, one of the things that we try to do each week is do the whole, you know, figure out how many, the numbers, I should say, on how many people have died in the occupation, the illegal occupation of Iraq. And as of today, we have 2,274 Americans that have died in Iraq. And that's 2,137 since the mission accomplished, speech, codpiece included. Also, you know, on the Iraq side, of course, that's, you know, in excess of 100,000. And who knows exactly how many, you know, that is. I mean, it could be anywhere from 120,000 to 140,000. Anyway, you know, that's the human cost of the war and or the occupation. I did want to shift things a little bit and bring this back full circle this week in that, you know, we have created, if you will, an atmosphere of where, you know, when you when you're detaining people, that anything goes, you know, and that's worldwide. We're, you know, we've done rendition, we've picked people up off the street, we've stuck them in the back of vans, put bags over their heads, stuck them on private airplanes, and flown them all over the world to be tortured. Okay, we've flown them to Romania. When that was found out, they started building and are presently building a prison now in northern, in Morocco, I believe, in northern Africa. You know, these private these detention centers are springing up everywhere. This, you know, this attempt at, you know, illegally detaining people who may or may not have anything to do with terror or any terror group per se. You know, there's the jury is still out, I think, on all of that. But I mean, an interesting story we covered a few months ago was about a German man who had nothing to do with any terror, you know, and was put in Guantanamo for, I think, you know, like 2 years. You know, these are perfect examples of, you know, thousands of people that have been disappeared. But it's bringing it all back to the United States. You know, we now have prisons and jails and boot camps, if you will, around the country that seem to be adopting some of these new standards in corrections. Wonderful standards, aren't they, John?
Well, you know, you told me a little bit about this before, and I went to military school in high school, so I think it's frightening that this could be happening in some sort of a thing that's dealing with students, you know. So I mean, you know, you should read a bit of that thing that you read to me earlier.
I will, and you know what I'm going to talk about. If you listen to Bob Kincaid's show, that's Bob Kincaid at HeadOnRadio.com. If you listen to his show yesterday, you got a piece. A guy called up from Panama City, Florida, and he talked about a gentleman, a young man by the name of Martin Lee Anderson, who died of internal bleeding recently after being beaten, restrained, and dragged around the yard of a boot camp in Florida. The video, which I watched yesterday, all 30 minutes or 28 minutes of it, is appalling, is frightening, and made me furious. And, you know, and some of that is coming through right now. I watched it, and I could not believe the things that they were doing to this 14-year-old boy. He's not a grown man, to start with. These are grown deputies dragging this kid around, beating him, smacking him around, you know, and finally they had him down on the ground, face down, with a knee, you know, several people holding him down.
This is some sort of like short-term boot camp thing that parents are sending their kids off to if they think that, you know, that their creativity might be a threat to national security or something.
No, this is a juvenile boot camp, which is a Department of Juvenile Justice facility. Okay, so in other words, he was convicted, I think, of stealing or something like that. And I'm looking right now to see exactly what he was convicted of. It, you know, absolutely did not require the death penalty.
And I'm sorry, a juvenile detention center should just be like a really, really locked up and controlled school. I mean, you cannot treat a 14-year-old kid who got busted for stealing as a hardened criminal if you want to have any chance of him actually believing that if he does his time, that when he turns 18, you know, he'll be able to start things fresh. I mean, Jesus, what do they expect out of kids these days, man?
You know, it is amazing to me. At one point, you know, it is amazing. At one point, a guard struck him from behind, hitting him so hard that it lifted his feet off the ground. And at one point, when he was laying on the ground, a guard struck him several times, either on his arm, you know, or his torso. Now, this child had sickle cell anemia. And they're thinking that the injuries caused the free bleeding inside of him, which, you know, which caused
they
his
think?
Death. And
they think?
Yeah, that's what they're thinking. You know, that's the excuse that the sheriff's department has put forth. The most appalling part of this isn't even that. The most appalling part of this is that throughout this ordeal, there was a nurse present, a woman in a white coat with a stethoscope. Was present and, you know, watched them basically beat this child to death. And you can get that video, if you're interested in watching that video, you can get that video at WJHG.com. That's WJHG.com. And we've got some music coming in. And we're gonna do our top of the hour break, and we'll come back and talk about another situation that looks like that's happened in California, very similar to this one. This is Bruce Birch, and you're listening to Bruce and John on Fourth Estate Radio. And if you'd like to call us, please do so at 304-658-3333.
Hi, I'm Linda Ellerbee. Did you know that every 3 minutes another woman gets the news she has breast cancer? I got it 11 years ago, and I know how scary it can be. Everything your doctor says sounds like a foreign language. HER2-NU, oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options, and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. The first place to go the minute you find you have breast cancer, breastcancer.org.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
This is Fourth Estate Radio News with Bruce Birch. Seattle, Washington has just become the latest in a string of cities that has turned down bidding on hosting the 2008 GOP convention. Chicago and San Diego have also passed on the convention. Despite a report and call by the UN for closing the U.S. Military Detention Center at Guantanamo Bay, apparently a new wing is presently being constructed there. Most of Guantanamo's detainees are in open-air cells made of chain-link fence with a metal roof, or simple barracks where up to 10 cooperative men are allowed to live together. But some are in a new modern facility that cost more than $30 million to build and looks like it is there for the long term. Known as Camp 5, this apparently is the model for the newly being constructed Camp 6. Prosecutors on Friday asked that former Representative Randy Duke Cunningham be sentenced to the maximum of 10 years in prison for his stunning betrayal of the public trust by accepting bribes. Cunningham, 64, resigned from Congress last year after pleading guilty to accepting $2.4 million in bribes, including a Rolls-Royce, yachts, homes, and antique furnishings in exchange for defense contracts and other favors. More than a quarter million homes and businesses still lacked power across the Northeast today as temperatures plummeted following a storm with hurricane-force wind gusts that was blamed for 4 deaths. Wind was still blowing at about 30 miles per hour throughout the region Saturday. On Friday, the Weather Service reported wind of more than 60 miles per hour that buffeted the Rochester area, and a 77-mile-per-hour gust was recorded at the city's airport. This has been Bruce Birch for Fourth Estate Radio.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. There's been some talk today that Vice President Dick Cheney should step down, not so much because he shot an old man in the face, but because of how the whole situation was handled. If this happens, why this incident and not others should be the one to force out the most corrupt and secretive vice president we've ever had is just another example of what's wrong with this country. Because how this incident was handled was no different from how Mr. Cheney has handled pretty much everything since he took office. Try to keep it secret, then lie about it, then blame someone else, though not necessarily in that order. But we shouldn't stop with Mr. Cheney. We ought to demand the same thing of everyone in this administration, because the vice president's behavior isn't unique. They all do it, at every level. They're all corrupt, incompetent, and guilty of the same crimes. Democracy dies behind closed doors, so the saying goes, but this administration doesn't just close doors, they build walls. Walls that keep freedom out and keep the truth in. And any truth that manages to get out, like people looking to escape from East Germany, gets shot. Enough is enough. Mr. Bush, tear down this wall. We'll go easier on you, and history will be far kinder if you just admit how badly you screwed things up and let the grown-ups fix it. You can make it easier on all of us, or we can do it the hard way. The choice is entirely up to you. Remember, walls didn't protect Troy or Jericho or East Germany, and they won't save you. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Head on. He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. Head on radio.
Click on air every weeknight from 7.06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
everybody. Welcome back to Fourth State Radio. This is John Fox, and on the other side of the planet is Bruce Birch. And before I toss it to Bruce to continue on his train of thought, I want to plug something that will be coming up in the next couple of weeks. We are going to start having a once-a-month set of special programs coming, a co-production of Fourth Estate Radio and the Crick's Lecture Series that will be going down here in Sydney. The very, very first one is going to be hosted by a friend of the show, Mr. Anthony Lowenstein, and you can find his blog at anthonylowenstein.com, AntonyLowenstein.com. He's a really, really great author. He's opening this thing with a thing called Spinning Us to War. I will be attending and recording the thing and then coming back, and I reckon once a month we'll air one of these right after this program completes. So look forward to that. We're you can call in on 304-658-3333. That's ring in and speak to us on 304-658-3333. And, oh, I do believe we have Mr. Peter on line one. Bruce, you want to talk to Peter?
I would love to talk to Peter. Peter, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Bruce. Hey, John. I'm doing great this evening, and I'm calling because I wanted to get in a little bit on this discussion of boot camps.
Sure.
You know, being from Florida and living here in Tallahassee, I've had some exposure to the way that works, and I've got to tell you that it's boot camps are really nothing more than a way for the sheriff's departments to be abusive. Now, what I mean by that, prisoners who are held in the normal population of a jail, there is some modicum of respect, and it's minimal between guards and people who are kept in prison or in jail. But in general, there's abusive language, shoving, beating, and all that sort of thing. Is off limits unless, of course, the prisoner is fighting other prisoners or is you know out of control and has to be sedated or you know taken out of a cell or you know any number of reasons. But you know I have talked to you in the past, and as you know, I don't make any secret about the fact that I'm a recovering drug addict. I've been clean now since 2000. But prior to that,
good for you, and thanks for disclosing that, because that's, you know, not to get off topic, but that's, you know, that's still, there's still a huge stigma related to that in society. And it's,
well,
and
I spent 15 years that I really don't remember very well, a lot of wasted time, but during that period of time, I was no angel, and I committed crimes, and I've been in jail. Nobody was hurt. They were financial crimes, typical of someone who's tried to get money for drugs. But
right, okay.
Bottom line is, having been in jail, and I don't mean overnight, having been in jail, I've had the occasion to overhear what goes on in the boot camp. You see, boot camps, the one in Tallahassee, which is closed now, which is located or was located on the grounds of the main Leon County Jail. It's all one set of acreage there. And the boot camp is somewhat separate. It's chain-link fence area with chain-link fence over the top. And the underage, people who are under 18 years old can be sentenced there by a juvenile judge. And I've heard the yelling and the screaming and the abusive language coming from what they called drills. The kids are marched around. If you've ever seen a Marine Corps training movie where the drill sergeant gets in your face, "You worm, you," you know, blah blah blah.
Right, right. Movies.
Okay, well, it's just like that. I've overheard officers talking about the boot camp, and I'm going to tell you exactly the phrase that I overheard between two officers. Well, that boot camp gives us an excuse to beat them little niggers. And that's exactly what it's all about. It's about being abusive, and it's about, and that, you know, they're going to say, you know, "Oh, well, it's going to scare them straight." That's absolute bullshit. What you do is you scare people mean. It's been proven time and time again. The boot camp in Tallahassee has closed, and there's still an operation in other parts of the state. I guess I had thought that they were closed statewide, but this thing that just happened in Panama City is about 90 miles from here. The kid was charged with theft. Surprised me. I'm now finding out that they are open in other areas in Florida. And I think the reason they closed the one in Tallahassee is because it's right here under the under the governor's nose. And if something went badly wrong in the boot camp at Tallahassee, of course, it would be much too local for Jeb Bush to be able to deal with. Anywhere else that's more far-flung is maybe a little bit different story. But there are injuries constantly. And these injuries to the juveniles are taken care of normally in the jail clinic, and they're kept quiet. Nobody knows. Nobody knows about these kids with black eyes and sprained and bruised ribs and because, you know, it's handled internally there at the local clinic. And the only people that know about it are their kids' families. And, of course, sure. These tend to be poor blacks and poor whites who have no voice and typically have no credibility anyway. So, as kid in jail, you're poor, you're trash, you're going to say anything to defend your kid. But I've got to tell you, it's racist and it's evil and it's mean-spirited and it's done with a nod and a wink, and they all know it. And this is no huge surprise because kids are beaten that way all the time. It's just that this particular kid had a medical condition his injuries were severe anyway, but which is typical of what happens to the kids who are beaten and shoved around in those facilities. But this particular kid had a medical condition that caused his death a little bit later, so it couldn't be concealed. But I got to tell you, Bruce, this, I won't use the S word, but let's say this feces happens all the time. I have seen people carted out of that jail, the Tallahassee Lincoln County Jail, to Tallahassee Memorial Hospital time and time again. And, I just had to call because I'd seen it firsthand and it's bad news. Just I wanted to share a little bit. Welcome to my world. Welcome to the Jeb Bush world.
Well, thank you for calling in, Peter. I think one of the things that we're finding is that, I mean, this is not the first time. I mean, we've heard stories. There was a national story about this around I guess they're coming to get me.
Oh my God, Bruce! Oh my God!
That was a joke. Though.
Don't tell if you're
joke.
Talking to me, it'll be twice as rough on you, dude.
I don't want to hear that. I only want to hear that again, Bruce, is if it's real, please.
Okay. No, that was real. That was going by anyway, but it wasn't for me. But we've seen this. These boot camps, like in the summertime, with these unruly kids, where their parents put them into these programs, and the only thing that I can figure is that these people who run these programs are complete masochists and just they thrive on inflicting pain on other people.
Well, Bruce, you're absolutely right. And I have said in the past, if you want to see the lowest form of life on earth, you just drive out to the Leon County Jail parking lot and you sit in your car and you just drive out there and sit there during shift change. And you'll see people there that you would swear if they were an inch shorter, their knuckles would be dragging the ground. Evil people.
Well,
and
these guys who were
other areas, but in Florida, you have to be sentenced there by a juvenile judge. This has nothing to do with the parents wanting them to go there. Now,
right.
There may be some other way to get in, but normally it's by a judge.
Well, I know that in watching that video that I watched, it was amazing to me how they there was like six or seven cops that or sheriff's deputies. I should be respectful, right?
Yeah. Well, to tell you the truth, at least here in Tallahassee, the police department tends to be better educated and more, let me just leave it at that, better educated than the sheriff's department. You can get to go to work for the sheriff's department if you're able to crawl out of high school. At least the Tallahassee Police Department, I assume others have a, but they're bad cops everywhere. But, yeah, the sheriff's department is particularly low life.
Well, I just, in watching that video, and I just wanted to comment on this, in watching that video, it amazed me how they ganged on this one. There were seven cops, and they ganged up on this one kid, and they just beat the ever-loving hell out of him. And then when they figured out that he wasn't breathing, they scattered like rats leaving a sinking ship. It really was just disgusting to watch.
It's disgusting.
It was like all of a sudden nobody wanted to take responsibility for the fact that they beat the kid to death.
Yeah, and had that video camera not been there, and I'm surprised that film didn't actually disappear, the camera was broken, the cable was wrong, who knows what.
Yeah.
I'm very surprised. someone outside the jail must have discovered that. If it had been found inside the jail, there was a video, or there was requested before they had a chance to destroy it, I don't know, but they would have hid that. Those people stick together like a pack of rats. And stuff.
Right. Well,
Peter, you know, if it was done on a hard disk, you being a computer guy, as I know you well, you know it's not actually totally gone, even if you erase it.
Well, this is true, unless special steps are taken. But by and large, most people have no clue about how to permanently erase. That's true.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
hey, Peter, thanks a lot for that, and thanks for ringing in. And I do believe that we have Arbor Tender waiting on another line, do we not?
Cool. Looking forward to it. See you later.
Thanks, Peter. Arbor Tender, how are you doing this evening?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, but I'll get better, as somebody else likes to say. I stole that.
There's plenty of room for that.
Yeah, so we hear you got something on 9/11 for us.
Yeah, well, I got some conversation on 9/11 anyway. Listen, I don't hear any radio or television stuff about what's cooking with the truth about 9/11, and I have to tell you, I've been glued to a computer screen for the better part of 4 weeks now, digging in and trying to understand what the hell is going. Excuse me, what is going on? And
well, I have to agree with you that I haven't heard much of anything either, and that for some reason doesn't surprise me. There's been a lot of distraction stories out there over the last couple of weeks. Did I hear though something that with what's his name dropping out of Ohio, that there was a deal made for an investigation not to be done?
Are you talking about
Hackett? Do I remember that much? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything tied up with Hackett with that. But you know what? I don't think any more investigation is, at least in the direction it's investigating, is going to yield any fruit. It seems pretty clear that we have some pretty painful truths to face. And some of them have been really obvious to the people of America and the people of the world for quite a long time, and it is only with great effort that we are able to suppress our disbelief at the official line about this business. It's just not. I know it's going to be really difficult and painful and disturbing for people to face, but we're not talking about some overseas terrorist enemy. We really aren't. That's not the problem. And until we actually face the problem, all of this stuff that is unfolding on the back of this terrorist event that happened that shocked us all so badly, including what's going on in Florida with the boot camps, including what's going on with the burning of flags and buildings and rioting in the Middle East, until all of this stuff, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, what we're about to do in Iran, all of this stuff swings on the back of that event and our shock over it and our unwillingness to face what is real about that event. And until we do, we will never get anywhere. We're not going to solve this problem until we face the truth. And the fact that was a controlled demolition. Any idiot who has ever seen a controlled demolition knows that those were controlled demolitions. No jet fuel, no melted steel from jet fuel. Absolutely physically impossible. That's not what happened.
Let me just jump in there, because knowing how you are ear to the ground on this particular issue, this is a big part of your focus. There was that In Plain Sight documentary put out by the Power Hour or whatever, you know.
Yes.
And, you know, for all it's lacking in production value, it was all stock footage. And the one of the, like, three bits of footage that sticks with me from that doco is the one where you have, you know, those three or four, I guess it was, New York City fireys just after they had gotten back. And the guy says, man, it's like any controlled explosion I ever saw. You know, boom, 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 you know. It was just like someone said, take it down.
You know, the metal that...
And that footage has disappeared since.
They care. Our federal government made arrangements immediately after the metal, the molten metal, which could not have become molten by virtue of jet fuel. They made arrangements to carry all that metal away immediately as soon as it was cool enough to do so. And they took it on a ship to China and carried it away before any forensic examination was done. Now, I want to ask you, is it possible that something like that could possibly have happened without an inside contact? There's just no way.
Oh, absolutely not.
It's just impossible.
Absolutely not. Well,
it's absolutely impossible. And people need to look at this very carefully. We are fighting the wrong problem. The problem is not the terrorists. The problem is here. It's here.
Man, she's fired up, Bruce. You know, it's all about, again, we're never having the conversations that we need to be having. It's always off the actual topic. And I'm absolutely with you. And how, you know, voting machines even tie into this because of the fact that we know that a whole bunch of the people understand what has happened and the answers that we haven't been given.
It's too painful to deal with. It's too hard for sure. To think that our election system has been hijacked, it's just too painful. And plus, we don't want to set our remote controls down either. It's just, I'm appalled.
So am I, but, you know, it's going to continue to take us hammering it, you know. And I've even gotten to the point now that I don't skirt around the issue when it comes to right-wingers. When I end up with a right-winger on the phone, whether it's family or not, I just tell them how it is and tell them to get out of la-la land.
It's not just the right-wingers either. I'll tell you something. It's the left-wingers just as much as it is the right-wingers. This whole question of division between the right-wing and the left-wing and the different colored peoples and the different religious persuasions and the different divisions that they place between us, this is all smokescreen, all of it. All of it has been very get-go.
Absolutely, I am totally with you. And see, I think this also ties into where Bruce and I have talked at great length, or I've battled at great length, where I believe that the controlling interests who found a much easier time hijacking the right wing of politics, both in the UK, the United States, and here in Australia, also, whenever possible, ran bogus candidates in the opposition party.
Yes.
Because you always see the same list of people, you know, as Bob said, the Vichy Democrats, I think it was, or wherever that came from, you know, and I call them false labor people down here, and every time a real labor person steps up to the leadership, they kill him, right? And it's all a context argument, too, and this is where we have so much trouble, because every time, you know, it's so easy to get hijacked from the point by something small, because there's been so much deception and so much work done, you know, behind the scenes to hijack the discussion.
The deceivers, and they are legion, seem to be really quite enamored with the idea of using 9/11 for any particular flip of any switch. So you know what I say, since they've got it on the table in that way, that topic needs to be seized back. And every time any question comes up that has anything to do with anything relative to foreign policy or domestic policy, we need to immediately go directly to 9/11 immediately and not stop talking about it and not stop asking questions about it, because these controlling interests that you mentioned, we really must identify, and I think I got a pretty good idea what's going on. We need to identify them, and they must be routed, and it's here in our government, and our problem is a lot bigger than we think it is. It's a huge hoodwinking, and it's been perpetrated on the American people for better than 100 years. This goes way back. We have a lot of learning to do.
I totally agree with you, and we've been kind of working on a bit of a 9/11 terror special thing, and actually we have the first report of that coming from the Australian angle a little bit later in the show. Our buddy Fire Ant there in the Tom Hartman chat, who
yes.
is a legal student not far from his bar exam,
yes.
has put together a piece talking about terror financing and whatnot, and the anti-terror laws and John Howard on this end. The details are now finally starting to come out on Patriot 2. I think I'd like to, because, I mean, I love when you call up. This is great. I love these conversations that we have, because we just, you know, it's free-flowing, and you remind me of things that I forget while I'm trying to maintain my head doing this show. You know, I got people chatting at me and whatnot, and there's so many things that, you know, I can get tunnel-visioned when I get into this show. So, you know, I think you and I need to get together, and I would like to get some more of your views on really specifically how you think we can go about this, because, you know, again, this show is becoming more and more a vehicle for the actual activists on the ground and the people doing the work trying to get the truth out. So, Lori and I have who've been working on this thing for a little while, on and off, it's still a developing project. And the whole thing is that, like you said, it goes way back, and it's a lot bigger than the United States.
You guys are doing a really good job, and the fact that even a venue still exists, it's a darn precious thing. All I'm saying is people need to stick with the program. People need to stay focused on what the problem is, because it's not race, it's not religion, it's not abortion, it's not gays, you know, it's none of these things. This is not the problem.
Red herring is
it's not birdshot, for God's sake. That's not the problem.
You got
anyway,
it.
So I'm with you, man, and I'm in that chat room, and we need to get bigger than that chat room, let me tell you.
Okay, well, you know, we're working on that big time, and Arbor, thank you so much for ringing up. You know, we're about to the end of this, and I'll see you in the chat room after the show's over.
Take care, my friend.
All right, good night, darling. Okay, man, she rocks. This is we need more of this, man, because, you know, it's you and me trying to keep this thing going, and it's just like, you know, it's a big job, you know, and we don't have all the resources, so these are our resources, man. We have real people on the ground that are keeping their focus on the individual topics, and, man, I want 20 more Arbors.
I hear you, John. I'm thinking that maybe it might not be a bad idea sometime in the very near future to do a special, just to do a show that's strictly on this whole topic.
Well, I think you know, we've already kind of set the groundwork to that, and I think, you know, maybe now is the time to put some focus on it, because we're so far as you know, modern history goes, that's, you know, that's light years away, you know. So maybe it's time to revisit what went on.
Yeah, absolutely. Now we're heading out to a break. It's about 27 minutes after the hour, and you can call us if you'd like to be a part of this conversation by dialing 1-304-658-3333. That's 1-304-658-3333. Support the State Radio, Bruce Birch and John Fox. So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll, supposedly they say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show, where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Radio. I'm John Fox, and over on the other side of the planet in Greensboro, North Carolina, would be Mr. Bruce Birch. You there, Brucey?
That's North Carolina, John.
North Carolina.
There you go. You're doing a good job.
Somewhere south of Oregon.
Somewhere, actually, yes, very much south and east of Oregon. John, I understand
I one quick shout out to the chat room. The proletariat is a traitor.
He's not there. He's not there. He went to bed early. He said my accent was giving him a headache. So,
was it? Have you seen his website yet?
I think so.
Did you see his write up about our show?
Tell me about it, John.
I think you'll just have to read it because it's very him. But anyway, I thought I'd kick into our little Corporation Watch segment. And wait until he hears this in reply. before I get into a real juicy one, as I scroll down my own blog and try and find it, I love stories about my most despised corporation on the planet, and that would be McDonald's.
McDonald's, oh yes.
Coca-Cola and McDonald's are in a constant running heat as far as I'm concerned. When it comes to non-petrol companies. But anyway, we have a little story here saying, would you like lies with that? And it says from the AP, not long after disclosing that its French fries contain more trans fat than thought, McDonald's Corporation said Monday that wheat and dairy ingredients are used to flavor this popular menu item, an acknowledgement it had not previously made. The presence of those substances can cause allergic and or other medical reactions in food-sensitive customers. McDonald's has said until recently that its fries were free of gluten and milk or wheat allergens and safe to eat for those with dietary issues related to the consumption of dairy items. But the fast food company quietly added, contains wheat and milk ingredients this month to the French fries listing on its website.
Oh, my goodness.
Again, this company who has been busted for bone meal in their veggie burgers.
Bone meal in their veggie burgers.
Yeah. When they were running their veggie burgers, when they were first test marketing them, I think it was in limited state runs at that time, going back a little bit in the memory banks. And so they were, you know, trying to look healthier before they did this really, really healthy run thing that they've done recently kind of worldwide. Previously, it was just by thinking, add a vegetarian, trying to get the vegetarians in. One of the first things they did was that they said that they took all animal fats out of making the French fries. They made it all with vegetable oil now. They were paid big money to replicate the flavor, all this. So, I was a vegetarian pretty strict for about 5 years, and it was a good thing for me to do personally. It was something that I no longer needed to do, and that's fine. But if I were a vegetarian and I went into a major, 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 chain that said, look, hey, we're finally offering you something. And then not once, but twice, after being busted the first time, they said that they fixed it up. And sure enough, on the re-release, bone meal found in it. And it was as though they didn't care. They will lie through their teeth to get your dollar. And it does, and they don't care about people's health. And I'll move on from there. But just to remind everybody, if you want a burger, go find your local mom and pop joint, throw down the extra 75 cents, and be really proud to do it.
There you go. I have a question for you, John. I wonder if that bone meal, if any of Alistair Cook's bones was in the bone meal.
I actually get the impression that there's a couple of our chatters that actually get slightly grossed out by that promo, but hey man, check this one out. This one I love. This one I absolutely love, and I think you have the link for this. Check it out. The BBC reports a Nigerian militant commander in the oil-rich southern Niger Delta has told the BBC his group is declaring total war on foreign oil interests. The movement for the emancipation of the Niger Delta has given oil companies and their employees until midnight on Friday night to leave the region. It recently blew up two oil pipelines, held four foreign oil workers hostage, and sabotaged two major oil fields. The group wants greater control over the oil wealth produced on their land, they say. The warning came as militants and the army exchanged fire after a government helicopter gunship attacked barges allegedly used by smugglers to transport stolen crude oil. Correspondents say the militants provide security for the smugglers. Nigeria is Africa's leading oil exporter and the fifth biggest source of U.S. oil imports. But despite its oil wealth, many Nigerians live in abject poverty. This is the first time the military leader of the MEND government, Major General Godswill Tumuno, has spoken publicly of his group's aims. I find that very, very interesting.
It sounds like they're asserting control over their own natural resources. Isn't that just a terrible thing?
Isn't that so Central America?
This is so Central America. No, but you know what? This is fantastic, and I'm seeing that there really does seem to be a movement emerging worldwide where these nations that have been raped by the larger corporations for, decades, are now asserting, it's like they're seeing other countries doing this, and they're finally asserting control over their own natural resources. And I think it's fantastic because it's time, it just amazes me that here in the United States they're giving tax breaks for having SUVs, while these people in Nigeria, for instance, or who knows, Venezuela, for years have been starving despite having some of the world's largest oil reserves.
Yeah, and you would think that because of proximity to such an oil importer, the United States, there would be very, friendly. Sorry, I lost my spot with something that popped up in the chat. Sorry about that. But the other thing that I was thinking, as I mentioned this, I can just imagine someone like Arbor listening to that and saying, why is it that these really, really, really poor people who have really, really, really been screwed able to stand up and start making their own noise, and yet the America won't, the American people haven't hit the streets yet, and we have constantly, like Arbor said, it all comes back down to one event. And what may have led up to that one event, 9/11, what they did and maybe did not do to prevent or allow, however you look on this, the official line is horse dookie, right? And
horse dookie?
Horse dookie.
All right. Thanks.
I got stuck. We've had a few people using some pretty colorful language tonight, so I was trying to refrain. Why is it that, we watched when the elections were stolen in the Ukraine that they took to the streets, and we still, supposedly the greatest, most educated, baddest, whatever, badasses in the world, and we can't get off our ass, put down the remote, shut off Fox News, and go back and take control over we the people's damn government?
Well, I'm with you there, John. I'm thinking it's going to take a nuclear. I hate to say this because this is using their language, but it may take some sort of nuclear blast of some kind to get these people to stand up off of the couch and start taking initiative and responsibility for the kind of government that they need to have.
Well, we have the exact government that we asked for at the moment.
There you go.
Because we didn't bother getting our voice heard, and we've been hearing about this stuff since 1998. It's not new news. It's happened more than once. We've heard about what kind of went down, and also there's some stuff going on in Ohio where, the voting machine thing that we thought was getting out is somehow getting in, and they're playing all kinds of games again. Hey, if anybody's got opinions on this, then, if there's anyone in Nigeria on the net that'd like to ring in, we could, we're gonna give a little run of the toll-free number. You can ring us up toll-free at 877-443-2366. That's 877-443-2366. And, you know, corporation and crony watch, as we kind of refer to it, you know, in a way it is the international government watch. Because at this moment in history, we are looking at the fact that the corporations have a full stranglehold on governments worldwide, you know, and it's only in these governments that have told the World Bank and the whole rest of them to go get bent. They're doing well. They're unloading their debt. They're you know, making money off of their own resources and actually taking back what's theirs. You know, I just to me, it seems really, really obvious, you know. So, you know, again, if you have any comments on this or anything else that we've talked about or something that you're going, geez, guys, would you please talk about this? It's 877-443-2366. That's 877-443-2366. And I don't know.
Something, John, I wanted to mention, and this kind of ties in because this is another, you know, huge multinational corporation story, is the fact that DP World, which is a port company out of Dubai, is acquiring London-based Peninsular and Oriental Steam Navigation Company, the UK's largest port operator. And this acquisition would then give control over most operations at ports in New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Miami, Baltimore, and New Orleans to Dubai, to a company out of Dubai.
Yeah, I heard about this over the last couple of days, and you know, between that, you know, there was some noise from the White House recently about that China won't drop the U.S. dollar because it's not a good idea. Well, that's not what the Chinese are saying, and now Syria is talking about dropping the U.S. dollar. I'm starting to think that most of this corporate international economy is basically working on vapors, right? If they couldn't perpetuate the lie on everybody, none of it would exist. Is what I'm starting to want. You know, the way you look at these people just frauding people out of billions and ripping things off and buying things and selling things as though it's a game, you know. Those that have decided not to play that game are doing better. I mean, you only have to look at, like, Argentina. You know, after they told the World Bank to get bent, they're paying off their debt. You know, they're getting actual control over their own wealth. And I think that's what all this stuff, you know, comes down to, man. Why is it that these outfits are able to go and profit for doing nothing? All they do is pull it out of the ground and sell it, right? So why is it that we're going that probably this winter you've probably had higher than any time in the last decade deaths due to freezing with the elderly because people haven't been able to get heating oil because they're having to choose between their medicine and their food and their heating oil.
Well, and let's not forget that the fact that, you know, there's a new medicine program out there for older folks here in the United States anyway, Medicaid Plan D, that has increased medical or medicine costs for probably, you know, well over half of these folks. So now they're having not only to make, you know, decisions between rising costs of heating oil, but now rising costs of medication. And, of course, you know, with gasoline that has, you know, Exxon got the largest one-quarter profit ever known in the history of corporations, you know, gasoline is higher and petroleum. So, you know, what are we looking at again? We're looking at rising food costs because of the rising cost of fuel. So,
yeah, and if you follow the peak oil and similar studies, you know, that say whether, you know, it's 20 years, 50 years, 80 years when the tappable oil supply comes out, you know, runs out, the very, very first thing that's going to be scarce is going to be food. Mechanized our food production system so much over this whole planet that the moment that the petrol gets too expensive, production is going to halt from planting the seed because we don't do any of it without using fossil fuel.
Yeah.
And so that's why, you know, there are people like myself and a few friends that are doing serious research about buying land and making it completely self-sustaining, generating our own power, making our own biodiesel, making our own electricity, and growing as much of our own food as possible, and then doing commerce with our local community, wherever it is that we do this, so as that if the entire international, you know, monetary system collapses, we still can move on. We still can be there. We're not dependent on, you know, I mean, you brought in the pharmaceuticals. I mean, there's the other really, really big player on what screws the average person, Big Pharma. I mean, the way that they rip people off and, again, have been able to write their own legislation in the United States, down here in Australia for sure. But they got a little harder fight on their hands because there's a bit more of an expectation in Australia for drugs than in America.
Well, we got some music coming in, John. I'm thinking it's about time for a break. And if you'd like to get in on the conversation, you can do so by calling 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Also, you can send us an email, john@fourthestateradio.com or bruce@fourthestateradio.com. We'll be right back. This is Bruce and John, Fourth Estate Radio.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
In the beginning, there was dirt, water, and air.
And it was good.
Once, Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap, renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
It's called biodiesel.
I got a biodiesel.
Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Hello, I'm Martin Sheen. When I was growing up in Dayton, Ohio, I had an unforgettable mentor who believed in me and encouraged me to pursue my dreams. Today, there are millions of children across this country waiting for a mentor to help them. Improving the world starts with one child. Please, become a volunteer mentor for Mentoring USA. Give children the chance to develop and flourish and share in the future that belongs to them.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else.
is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Welcome back to Sports of State Radio. This is John Fox, and Bruce is over on the other side of the planet from me. And, Bruce.
Yes, John.
All right, just making sure you're there. I want to get this in before we get to the, before we run out of time in this hour, because it's just been chock-a-block full of stuff. But I have the first package from our friend Lori in Townsville here. Bob's got that queued up now. We're going to work on his audio production a little bit. I had to clean it up a little bit, but there's some really, really great information here on exactly to give you an idea how dodgy the legislation is here in Australia on these new anti-terror laws that they slipped in. And he'll give you a little bit of context here to open things up. So do you want to go ahead and roll that, Bob?
Before the close of Parliament last year, the Australian government passed anti-terror legislation that could potentially affect the rights and liberties of all Australians. No one knows for sure how long the Australian Prime Minister John Howard wanted these sorts of laws to be passed. Some say that it had always been his career goal, but his behaviour and his attempts to pass these laws has been unconscionable. It has been known by many Australians that as soon as the Coalition had gained control of the Senate, John Howard would run riot. Last November, as the Parliament was debating laws, certain media and civil liberty groups had been growing concerned about the radical plans that the Howard government was planning. Concerned his bill would not get through as quickly as he would have liked, John Howard resorted to scare tactics to pressure Parliament to pass the laws. He said that there was a terrorist attack about to happen in Australia, and that only his proposed new laws could save Australia. However, a member of ACO then criticised John Howard for nearly wrecking a two-year operation. Within a few days, police were able to arrest those suspects under the current laws. It turned out that Australia did not need new terror laws to be passed before Melbourne Cup Day. Then came the push to have the new laws passed before Parliament on recess for Christmas. This is traditionally a good time for governments to pass unpopular laws, as the general population will have forgotten about it by the time Parliament commences the following year. He also pushed for radical changes to the industrial relations laws at the same time. This is a good tactic to create a diversion from the public eye or draining the energy of opposition politicians who may have otherwise rejected the anti-terror bill. So, what are some of the impacts of these new laws? Well, today I'm going to deal with financing terrorism. Here, a person is guilty of financing a terrorist if they collect money for another person and is reckless whether that person would use the funds to facilitate or engage in a terrorist act. That little section was added into the Commonwealth Criminal Code. The problem with this is that there is a chance that innocent people could be caught accidentally financing terrorists. Say if you donated money to a charity and somehow that charity donates money to an organization that has links to a terror group. Potentially, you could face life imprisonment for that. It may have never entered your mind that the person you donated money to, or the person they donated money to, or the person they donated money to, would later use the money for terrorist activities. So it seems that you don't need a guilty conscience for a guilty mind. There is no exception for donating money for humanitarian aid. So if you donated money to World Vision or Greenpeace or to the Tsunami Fund, and you didn't inquire exactly where every cent of that money you've donated goes to, and that money you donated, like, somehow indirectly funds terrorism, you are guilty. This amendment to the law should be amended again, or cut out so innocent people don't get punished for accidentally funding a terrorist organization. And why shouldn't it be amended? As it stands now, John Howard himself could be guilty of financing a terrorist attack under his very own laws with the wheat board scandal.
Well, there you have it. I didn't get to quite produce it as a piece there before we went on air, but I wanted to get that on. So what basically he's saying there is that, you know, you donate to some small organization, you know, and you think it's, you know, something for kids for some school. And, you know, if 6-7 steps down the line, you know, it ends up going to some terrorist organization, you can be held accountable. And with the fact that Howard allowed $300 million go straight to Saddam, maybe his own laws will come to bite him in the bum. So I do believe that we're coming up onto the end of the hour very shortly here. We'll be hearing some music kick in a minute. So don't forget, you can ring us in on the 800 number, which I don't have up in front of me. Someone will pop that up in the chat room for you. And we're blogging at fourthestateradio.com as usual. Now, I still have one more piece of audio a little bit later that we'll get into in the third hour, which will deal also with the Australian anti-terror laws and kind of a bit of the way that the media was used and the way that the pressure was used to pass something that might not have been necessary and how it might not have been all on the up and up. And hey, surprise, surprise, in our current world, a right-wing government not being on the up and up. So we are about 2 minutes from the top of the hour. We will see you soon on the other side of this break. I'm John Bruce on the other side. See you here on Fourth State Radio. When it comes to the gun, there's a bullet power within us.
One of the many things people expect schools to do these days is inspire students to be creative. Hello, I am Richard Thompson. Educators and psychologists agree. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math and English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. Kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff like fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy, just waiting to be explored by young minds. Don't let it go to waste. Please support your school music program.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, part of a sound education.
This is Fourth Estate Radio News with Bruce Birch. Seattle, Washington has just become the latest in a string of cities that has turned down bidding on hosting the 2008 GOP convention. Chicago and San Diego have also passed on the convention. despite a report and call by the UN for closing the U.S. Military Detention Center at Guantanamo Bay, apparently a new wing is presently being constructed there. Most of Guantanamo's detainees are in open-air cells made of chain-link fence with a metal roof, or simple barracks where up to 10 cooperative men are allowed to live together. But some are in a new modern facility that cost more than $30 million to build and looks like it is there for the long term. Known as Camp 5, this apparently is the model for the newly being constructed Camp 6. Prosecutors on Friday asked that former Representative Randy Duke Cunningham be sentenced to the maximum of 10 years in prison for his stunning betrayal of the public trust by accepting bribes. Cunningham, 64, resigned from Congress last year after pleading guilty to accepting $2.4 million in bribes, including a Rolls-Royce, yachts, homes, and antique furnishings in exchange for defense contracts and other favors. More than a quarter million homes and businesses still lacked power across the Northeast today as temperatures plummeted following a storm with hurricane-force wind gusts that was blamed for 4 deaths. Wind was still blowing at about 30 miles per hour throughout the region Saturday. On Friday, the Weather Service reported wind of more than 60 miles per hour that buffeted the Rochester area, and a 77-mile-per-hour gust was recorded at the city's airport. This has been Bruce Birch for Fourth Estate Radio.
The Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. I'm not surprised that greedy and ambitious people sometimes lie and do far worse than lie in order to get what they want. In their minds, the ends really do justify the means, and not only are they not ashamed of it, they're proud of it. It shows that they're people who can get things done. That's why so many of these people admire football. They see it as a microcosm of the real world where the right combination of talent and teamwork equals success. But football is a sport where people are expected to play and win by the rules of the game. And while both players and fans will tolerate a limited amount of going around the rules or using them to your advantage, we wouldn't praise a team if they intentionally set out to injure their opponents or bribe the officials. No decent sports fan wants his or her team to win under such circumstances, and players know that if they go out to injure other players, they face retaliation. So why then do we tolerate this kind of extreme behavior from our political leaders? Certainly who wins and loses in politics has a lot more bearing on our lives than who wins the Super Bowl. The real problem is that what's happening in Washington is just a charade, a circus to keep us distracted while our freedom and our money is being stolen from right under our noses, behind the scenes and away from public view. That's why an independent press, along with an open government, are so important, because it's behind these closed doors where the rules are broken and the results are rigged. And when that happens, everyone loses. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
You see the 90% of the people in jail are black. That's what you see. You see the 90%.
to Fourth Estate Radio. I had to remember that. This is Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and on the other side of the planet from me is a gentleman by the name of John Fox. You with us, John?
Hey, man, I'm here.
Fantastic. Welcome back, dear listeners, to Hour 3 of Fourth Estate Radio. Now, if you'd like to get in on the conversation, you can do that by dialing 1-877-443-2366. Get on Fourth Estate Radio on the Head-On Radio Network. Get on our horn here. 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. Now, we are chatting in the Tom Hartman chat room. You can get there by going to tomhartman.com. That's Tom with an H, Hartman with two N's, .com, and click live chat, and it'll get you right there into the chat room where some of the most intelligent minds in the universe come and hang out and talk about all kinds of neat stuff. John, we're being archived by WhiteRoseSociety.org, and you can go there, and Ben Birch is doing a fundraiser right now, as are we. So if you want to donate some of your hard-earned money to help us do our hard-working show, you can do that by going to fourthestateradio.com and also to Ben Birch by going to whiterosesociety.org. John, I got an interesting story here about, this is out of Raw Story, about...
I've got my browser open, so I actually can read along with you. Please, continue.
Thank you. This is out of rawstory.com, and apparently there is a blogger who issued an FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act request, to the FBI to get a copy of the vice president's FBI file. And apparently the FBI has located 780 pages. Now, let me just read this to you because I think it's easier to read it than it is to explain it. But the Federal Bureau of Investigation has responded to a request from a San Francisco-based blogger for Vice President Dick Cheney's FBI file, but has been withholding its release since September 2005, Raw Story has learned. In a letter to blogger Michael Petrelis of PetrelisFiles.com, that's PetrelisFiles.com, the section chief for the FBI's Records Management Division acknowledged in August 2005 that the Bureau had located some 780 pages on the vice president. Petrelis then agreed to pay for all copying costs. To date, however, Petrelis has not received a single page on Cheney. He apparently made the Freedom of Information Act request in 2004, along with a request for files relating to President George W. Bush. He requested that the files be expedited in September 2004, a month before the presidential election, citing the fact that myriad pages of John Kerry's FBI files had already been released. He actually received 20 pages on Bush in 2005. I find it appalling that they even gave out 20 pages, John.
Well, I mean, this is just kind of like classic, it goes along with the thing that, Dick Cheney gets to live by a different set of rules than any other American in history. You know what I mean? Like, he gets special treatment with everything, down to, shooting his friends in the face to the point where they're apologizing to him for being in the way of his buckshot, to the fact that, his energy task force meetings are all kept under secret lock and key because they're supposedly, homeland security issues and all this kind of, I'm looking at a picture of him in that Raw Story article, and he just looks like a sneering, like, going, I'm screwing you all up the bum for money.
Do you remember in Batman, the television show, the Penguin?
Yes, I do.
That's who he reminds me of.
Well, our producer has just kicked in and saying, remember, his residence is blocked out on Google Earth, and not only that, his one residence has a permanent no-fly zone, which we reported a few weeks ago, over the residence, even when he's not there, and that kind of thing is not even held for Bush's ranch that's not a ranch, because you can't have a ranch with no cattle.
Well, and, the White House isn't even blocked out or blacked out on Google Earth. But Cheney's residence in suburban Maryland, I believe, is where it is. It is blocked out. It's just, you know, these people.
And the pilots, from what I remember, the local pilots were kicking up a real stink because it was like really, really inconveniencing them to have to, you know, fly way, way out of what should actually be, you know, a free path. I mean, you know, the president's not there. You know, with the technology that they have, they know if there was somebody doing something there anyway. I mean, come on, you know, you have to be kidding me. And I wonder if this comes from the man's own paranoia.
Well, I would encourage anyone who wants to follow this story to go to Petrelis Files, PetrelisFiles.com, and check out what Michael Petrelis has done. And actually, on the Raw Story article, if you go to rawstory.com, you can get that. There's actually an attachment with a couple of images of the letters that he has received related to this particular situation. But, you know, I don't expect them to give out any. I mean, you know, this is the sad part, John, is that I don't expect the government to give out anything on Cheney or Bush because, you know, there's no incentive for them to do it. It just is amazing.
Absolutely not. You know, I mean, they have lawyers as, you know, attorneys general that were personal attorneys to the president and whatnot. I mean, these people are going to write and read things in the direction of what the administration wants to hear, not what actually would live by the letter of the law for the American people. And, you know, I hate to go back to it, but, you know, Cheney's hunting incident is just a perfect symptom example of the lack of accountability.
Yeah, you know, these thugs, they operate in the dark. They're like mushrooms, they, you know, and they're not even as nice as mushrooms are. mushrooms
are
good.
Like even Al Frank, you know, like Al Franken brought up a really, really good point, you know, regarding the shooting, but I think it's regarding Cheney in general, really. You know, he said, you know, on the drinking thing, he says, now, I don't know exactly what kind of medication the vice president's on, but considering all of his heart trouble and everything else that he deals with, and the fact that he's got an entire medical team, ambulance and all, riding, you know, practically connected to his hip, you know, I mean...
There's so much that just doesn't add up, John. And you know what?
And the thing that did I say this before that Al Franken has a doctor friend out in the middle of a hunting area that he says, you know, if the shooting happens before 11, it's either stupidity or geriatrics, and if it's after 11, it's drunk.
Well, yeah, I, you know, knowing hunters and being raised in the South in a very, very rural area, I would tend to have to agree with that. What amazes me?
I wouldn't have a problem with it if he admitted that they had a couple of beers and something went horribly wrong and he blasted the guy in the chest and face and had gone to the cops about it. If he had done that, no matter how horrible the incident was, I would feel just a little bit better about the Satan, you know, who is flesh, which is Cheney, our vice president.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I also think that, you know, as we go through our program, maybe, John, you know, you and I should talk about perhaps inventing a new type of math, because what they do doesn't add up.
Oh, absolutely, man. It's just like what happened to Winston Smith that day that he finally was actually saying out loud and believing in that 2 and 2 equal 5.
I got another story here. I know we're going to be heading out to a break here shortly, but I have another quick story that I wanted to bring by the attention of everyone, and that is that apparently the NAACP, the national NAACP, not the state, but the national NAACP, has come out and is trying to postpone upcoming elections, municipal elections in New Orleans, until displaced voters have been located. And according to Bruce Gordon, who is the president of the NAACP, he's quoted as saying, "We're worried about the voting rights of our people in New Orleans who are not, for the most part, in New Orleans." He said, "People should still have a say in what happens in the communities that were ravaged by Katrina." Apparently, he has asked U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez to make sure election procedures are fair. The Voting Rights Act allows federal officials to scrutinize election changes that may hurt minorities. Gordon says, if it requires us to take legal action, we will fight this. Apparently, only about a third of those residents have returned to Orleans Parish, which was two-thirds black before Hurricane Katrina, according to estimates from the Greater New Orleans Community Data Center. Tens of thousands of displaced people are still without permanent housing, and mail delivery is delayed. So getting these folks to be able to vote via absentee ballot would probably be a very difficult thing to do. Now, these municipal elections are April 22nd, and the NAACP officials are saying that date is far too soon. So,
I can see the argument there.
One more story from the front lines in Louisiana. John, go ahead, John.
Sorry, no. I thought you were trying to move on to something else, but I can definitely see the NAACP, taking the stance a little bit here, and it does make sense because probably the voting rights of these people really does need to be ensured, because I think the administration's part of their goal in letting this happen to these people was to try and locate them from their homes. And maybe this is one step to avoiding that happening. So, I'm hearing the music kick in. We're going out to a break. So right after these messages, we'll be back with more for the State Radio. I'm John. Bruce is over there. I'm over here. And we'll see you right after this break.
It's Grace.
We're actually very boring people, Rama. That's why we call ourselves homebodies.
Well, it's Rama.
Sure. I mean, group sex for us is when we're both involved.
That's a
It's really, really smart.
Yeah, work the shoe
we're
leather,
a nice
though.
Little Petri dish here in Vermont, because you can experiment.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the web at homebodies.ramabahama.net.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show, where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, get a backbone, for God's sake. Stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Alright everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. It's coming up on, I think, about 22 minutes past the hour, and Bruce Birch, speaking of pieces fitting, going from that song, it says, seems that you have a story about something about a missed opportunity with Iran?
You know, yeah, I do. But maybe Bob can help you out with the echo there. There we go. Thank you. U.S. apparently received a fax. Now, this is something that's going to probably be in the news over the next week or two or three or four. As we, you know, as the Bush war machine gears up for a showdown with Iran. In May 2003, shortly after the U.S. military destroyed the army of Saddam Hussein, a fax arrived at the State Department with an Iranian offer to open talks that would include a discussion of weapons of mass destruction. Apparently, the one-page document was written by Sadegh Karzai, Iran's ambassador to France and a nephew of the Iranian foreign minister, and passed on by the Swiss ambassador to Tehran, who represented U.S. interests in Iran. The official who saw the document said it indicated that Iran wanted to negotiate a grand political bargain with the United States that would include everything from Iran's nuclear program to its support for groups that Washington regards as terrorists. The Iranians acknowledged that WMD and support for terror were serious causes of concern for us, and they were willing to negotiate, said Flint Leverett, a former senior director for Middle East Affairs at the National Security Council, who said he read the document. The message had been approved by all the highest levels of authority. They wanted us to deal with sanctions, security guarantees, normalization of relations, and support for integration of Iran into the WTO, the World Trade Organization. You know, why does this sound like, you know, 1990 with Iraq all over again, John?
Well, because it is. You know, I mean, here, you know, I think we're getting a little bit of the other side of the story here. And, you know, the other side of the story always brings with it context. And it seems as though we're in the same context as we were in, you know, in pre-going into Iraq. You know, here you obviously have, you know, like I said, it wasn't all that long ago that I remember Iran was a shining light in the Middle East for the fact they had such a moderate government. And it's gone another way because I think this administration has basically told them to go screw themselves. And they're not listening to anything. And what you're reading here, to me, it sounds like, you know, the Iranians, you know, rocked up and said, hey, you know, why don't we get together and talk about some of this stuff? And you had probably the Bush administration sticking their fingers in their ears going, I don't hear you.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
They go around and say that they won't talk. And I just, it's this immature, childlike, playground kind of attitude towards world affairs that
Yes. Well, and here in the article it says very simply, the Bush administration was in no mood for conversation or grand political bargains. According to Leverett, who left the government in mid-2003, the administration rejected the Iranian probe and instead sent a complaint to Swiss Ambassador Tim, oh my goodness, I don't know if I can say that, Guldiman, saying that he had overstepped his role as an intermediary by passing it on in the first place. So, in other words, you know, the faux cowboy from
Crawford, Texas, who is, you know, stomping around through the Mideast, you know, his, you know, I can only imagine that what he's saying is, well, we're winning the war on terror, so therefore we don't have to negotiate with anybody.
He's a fool. I mean, you know, he's a fool. I just, you know, you keep adding all this stuff up, and, you know, and I got to say, I got to keep running with, you know, our pretender here. You know, it all comes back down to a central issue that we still haven't looked at, you know, that we still haven't been honest about. And from what I understand, from what I heard on Randy Rhoads' show during the week, this week, was just like when Bush said he'd go back to the UN with his rock-solid evidence and never did. We had stage one of the 9/11 investigation, and then there was supposed to be stage two. And if I'm not mistaken, and we'll have to look into this, that they have basically buried stage two, which was where there were requests to get into the things that the first Inquisition was not allowed to get into, which was, you know, for all the best attempts of some good people, was a fairly staged event.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, a lot of good information came out about things that can be done to make things better, but, you know, with the way that they keep playing the American people with fear, the Australian people with fear, you know, it's just for continuing to perpetuate a lie. And sometimes the easiest answer is the simplest one. And I really have to wonder, you know, you go back and look at PNAC and all that other stuff. You know, this is all playing out to the neocon plan. You know, this is all playing out to their graduate thesis that they wrote, you know, that Wolfowitz wrote when he was in college. It's almost exactly to the letter.
Well, yeah, Bill Kristol and all that bunch over at the Project for a New American Century.org. We've got some music coming up. You are listening to Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and my pal John Fox is over there in Australia. If you'd like to get in touch with us, if you'd like to get in touch with us, please dial 1-877-4 head on for Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Bird.
Fight childhood asthma, then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Well, my baby, she don't want me around. She said she's tired of watching me fall down. She wants a good life and all the best, but I like that bottle better than the rest. And she said, I think that you're headed for.
You ever get the impression that maybe George W. Bush listened to that song in private at some point? And this is John Fox back on Fourth Estate Radio, and Bruce Birch is with me over there. And Bruce, I do believe we have Lystra on a line one.
We do indeed have Lystra on line one. Lystra, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm fine.
Good, man, it is so good to have you on Fourth Estate Radio. Fantastic. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, you know, there was all this brouhaha last week about Cheney and the shooting.
Yes.
And apparently Cheney was on TV, and I didn't see him myself. I heard he was interviewing with someone, and he said that he has the authority to declassify documents according to Executive Order 13292. Have
yes.
you heard about this?
Yes. Well, I was actually... tell me about it.
Oh, you know something about it? Well, Executive Order 13292 is a further amendment to Executive Order 12958, as amended, classified national security information. Executive Order 12958 was an order which originated with Clinton. And let's see, the first paragraph says, this order prescribes a uniform system of classifying, safeguarding, and declassifying national security information, including information relating to defense against transnational terrorism. Now, down in this order, Part 1, Section 1.3, where is it, 1.3, paren 1, paren, the authority to classify information originally may be exercised only by the president and in the performance of executive duties, the vice president. So now the vice president has the authority to classify information. But if he can classify, he can also declassify. Which
that's
is
correct.
It, huh? Mm-hmm.
I said that's correct, right?
Well, yes, one would think, you know, if you can give, you can take away. And I'm thinking this has some connection to Scooter Libby. Because if Cheney says that he had the authority to declassify Valerie Plame's identity as an undercover agent, then, and him telling Libby, then they would get both of them off the hook. I'm thinking that this is going to be the excuse that they're going to use.
I reckon that you're right, Lystra. This almost plays like the thing with DeLay, that as his indictment was coming more and more near, they changed the rules of the Senate Ethics Committee to say that he could stay leader, but then got embarrassed into having to repeal that decision, and he had to step down.
Well, I also think that maybe the timing of this needs to be looked at. When did they leak her name to the media, and when did this order take effect?
But you get caught up, but just I'm going to jump in one more time. They're getting caught by the rule as it stands, and just as these guys always do, if you don't like the rule as it stands, just change the rule mid-game without any discussion or, you know, legal challenge.
Well, this executive order is going to stand. It can only be challenged in court. And you know, if it goes to the Supreme Court, that, you know, they're going to vote either 5-4 or 6-3 in favor of, you know, the president and the vice president having almost unlimited authority to do anything that they want. So, you know, I wonder, it was, you know, with the vice president being given this authority, I mean, does that expand his powers? I would think so. So, like, what do we got going here? We got a co-president? I mean, we all know that Cheney is the most powerful vice president, you know, in history.
I still wonder if the guy he shot just forgot to refer to him as Mr. President out on the field.
If he what?
Forgot to refer to him, to Cheney,
Mr. President,
as Mr. President.
Right, I know. Yeah, that's all stinky. But, you know, I think that the media and, you know, especially liberal talk shows are spending too much time on this gun thing. You know, I mean, I know it's all colorful and everything, but there's some other stuff going on behind the scenes, you know, as our bartender was saying.
Sure.
When she was talking before, that people should be addressing. And I think this is one of those things that should be addressed. It should be out in the open, that Cheney has more authority now, which is a pretty scary thought to me. Huh?
Yeah.
I agree with you, and a lot of this stuff, and I do agree with you, you know, everybody's had a little bit probably too much fun in regards to time spent covering the shooting thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it was just one of those things that was just so outlandish.
True.
That it was somehow unavoidable, you know, like, you know, even the, you know, that Franken bit that I saw where he says, you know, I got online and wrote 5 or 6 jokes out right quick and posted them straight away because I knew there was going to be a mad rush, and if I didn't do it soon, I was going to be completely way too late as far as a comedian goes.
Yeah.
But he also said, you know, all the comics are praying for the guy to get out of hospital because it goes suddenly from, you know, F to NF really quick. But I think it's time to step off of that and get back on focus, because I think, you know, we got so focused on the filibuster attempt and everything. I think it's taking us a little time to also regain our focus on the big prize, which is some accountability and getting to the heart of what's put us in the situation.
Well, you know, there's always the tipping point with these things going on, and perhaps people think, you know, well, this will do it with Cheney. But in the meanwhile, there's really serious stuff going on, and I tend to think of the more serious stuff, as you notice. And I think this stuff should be before the public more than it is.
Well, I was just doing a little research.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was just doing a little research, and what I found is that this order was issued on March 25th, 2003.
Uh-huh.
The article that was published by the Washington Post, I believe it was, by Robert Novak,
uh-huh,
came out on July 14th, 2003.
Uh-huh.
So just by that alone, the timing is somewhat suspect. I would say, I know that as a part of the investigation, that the information has been released that they were shopping the story around for a while before Novak decided to take it. So it's quite possible that, you know, they realized what they were doing and issued this, you know, to try to cover their tracks for this situation.
Well, I'm not saying necessarily that there was a connection back then, but I'm just saying I think it's going to be used now.
Yeah.
You know, for a possible way for them to wiggle out of it.
Absolutely.
I just made that connection now, not that, you know, that it could have been true like back then.
Well, the timeline is there. I mean, I'm saying that the you know, it's very possible that the information was leaked and this order came out almost within days of each other.
Uh-huh. Well,
so.
I have to go, guys, but I just wanted
okay. You
to be aware of that. I guess you were a bit zap already, Bruce. Okay, I got to run.
Thank you so much for calling us, Lestra. Have a wonderful night.
All right, thanks for that, Lestra. And she's right. Keeping, you know, we got to keep our eye on the prize here. As far as the big picture goes, and you know, they do such a great job with their media control and their spin machine to create things to distract us and whatnot. But before Lystra rang us, I was gonna play one more last bit of Australian audio, and we might not get through all of it, but I think we'll get through quite a bit of it. Media Watch is a program that just made its return after its hiatus, and this is a great little program where some journalist for, say, the Sydney Morning Herald or some other such organization takes a bit of a siesta from their regular gig and goes and works for the ABC and gets 12 minutes to pick apart their own industry as a media check, and it ends up being a political check as well. So we have this little bit of audio here from and Bob can run that. This is from Media Watch in Australia.
Well, now, last November, the media was all over the biggest story of the year when police swooped on homes in Melbourne and Sydney and arrested 17 men who were charged with terrorism offences.
Good evening. It's been an unprecedented day for Australia's national security, with the war against terrorism coming to suburbia.
Involving more than 400 state and federal police, the operation began at 2:30 this morning. The first arrest, a suspected terrorist cornered at Condell Park, his location pinpointed by heat-seeking equipment aboard the police helicopter.
Well, the media didn't need heat-seeking equipment. They had the police to guide them not only to where the suspects were arrested, but to the supposedly anonymous informants who'd helped them crack the case. A week after the arrests, one of those informants called John Laws on Sydney's 2UE.
Good morning, John. I wanted to speak to you about the raids that took place on those terrorists.
Yes, okay.
Yes, I actually manage the chemical company that's mentioned in the Australian.
Jeff is not, of course, his real name. But despite police promises that his identity would be protected, he'd been contacted by the Australian's reporter, Simon Carney.
The Australian were at my premises after hours and wanted to interview me and said that if I didn't proceed with an interview, they would publish the company name in the paper, along with three other companies who had given information to the hotline.
So they threatened you that if you didn't give an interview, that they would name your company?
Yes.
How the hell did the Australian newspaper find out who you were anyway?
They said they had a copy of the search warrants, and on the search warrants it stated the people's name they're searching, what goods they're looking for, and the name of the people who'd given information or ring the hotline.
The warrants were handed to some suspects and families during the raids. They were accessible to journalists and even videoed at the scene. It's understandable that a good journalist would follow a lead like this, but Jeff says he felt exposed and threatened by Carney's approach, though the reporter and his editor believe he acted ethically.
The witness was never threatened. Simon told him that his identity was already in the public domain, his company having been listed on warrants, that he might as well tell his side of the story, as there was no doubt more reporters would be knocking on his door.
After Carney's call, Jeff contacted the police.
I rang back the task force and said, "This prick's going to print my name." The task force rang back later in the evening and said the Australian agreed not to go to print with names and addresses.
And they didn't. But a police stuff-up identifying the businesses in warrants meant it was open to all reporters to go get them. Channel 10 showed a store where chemicals, allegedly for bomb-making, were bought. Then they named and even interviewed the reluctant proprietor, who, like Jeff, had been promised anonymity by the police. We've blurred that footage, but Channel 10 didn't, even though the informant says he made it perfectly clear that he didn't want to be interviewed.
After the raid, some journalists came. I said, "I do not want to go on the media." But Channel 10, they came to see me. They said, "Don't worry, they're all in jail." I was confused. These things are secret. I asked my senior detective, "What's happened?" They know my name. The journalist ring me. He said, "Maybe they take the identity from the court."
Channel 10 and their reporter John Hill confirm that they identified the man through court documents. But they too say they did nothing wrong.
"We have not received any complaint from the store owner, verbal or otherwise, in the 3 months since the interview."
But the store owner told Media Watch he was worried for his safety.
"Everybody rang me and said, 'We saw you on the TV. I try to help our community. If this happens, I am not safe.'"
He has a young family and he's not sure he'd help the police again. And that's a problem because the police need all the help they can get in their fight against terror. The man we've called Jeff wasn't named in The Australian, but he's still worried and angry.
"Of course it makes you feel vulnerable. Those terrorists know where I live. I don't even know what they look like."
The Australian Federal Police prepared the warrants used in the raids, but they say it's not their fault either.
The AFP considers that the level of detail contained within the warrant in question was appropriate. All possible steps are taken to protect the identity and confidentiality of witnesses and or informants.
But Attorney General Philip Ruddock isn't convinced.
I am concerned that search warrants drafted by the Australian Federal Police contained information that would easily enable a person to identify the names and details of potential witnesses and informants. I regret very much the fact the identities of two people who had assisted a counter-terrorism investigation were not fully protected.
Mr. Ruddock says he's received assurances from the AFP that they'll try to do better in the future. Well, we hope they do, because as the Attorney General and the AFP agree, people need to know that they can dob and not be discovered.
That's incredible, isn't it? Now, to give you a little context, these raids that they're speaking about took place within a matter of a couple of days before the vote was pushed through on our anti-terror legislation. And all these people could have been arrested under the old laws, but they used it as a guise to pass these new, very, very sketchy laws. And in the process, the thing is so just, you know, I mean, they're so disorganized and no one has any accountability. The poor guy that thought he was doing the right thing has his name, address, and company name put onto, to be put on the warrants that they were handed, you know? And then this is not going to help the fear factor in this country at all when you have a guy turn around and saying, now the terrorists know where I live, but they don't know that they were terrorists to begin with. I mean, that's incredible.
It's the very same stuff that happened here. It's the very same stuff that happened here, John, with the fact that, you know, that the Patriot Act, none of that would have stopped 9/11.
You're absolutely right, man. And these guys are in cahoots to keep us all scared and trying to keep our eye off the damn ball. So anyway, we are coming up on this break, man. It's coming up on, probably like something like 10 or 12 minutes before the hour. We got one more segment left, and you're listening to John and Bruce on Fourth Estate Radio. Don't have to put on my good shoes. My razor blade still has a shine.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
It's Grace.
We're actually very boring people, Rama. That's why we call ourselves homebodies.
Well, it's Rama.
Sure. I mean, group sex for us is when we're both involved.
That's incredible.
It's really, really smart.
We're a nice little Petri dish here in Vermont because you can experiment.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the web at homebodies.ramabahama.net.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycot. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
colors that you fly.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's time to wrap
love
up.
Just one
State Radio and Bruce Burt, what do you have happening tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow is All Things Reconsidered, the singular program that I do. That show will also be produced by our wonderful, wonderful, fantastic, amazing, seven-armed god in West Virginia called Bob Kincaid. Just as a shout-out to Bob there, man. You've done a great job throughout the entire show. Thank you so very much for doing what you do. All Things Reconsidered tomorrow night. We're going to have some audio clips from throughout the week, just some interesting stuff that's been happening, going on. I don't know if anybody caught it, but last night on Bill Maher, Russ Feingold was on there and had some very interesting things to say, and I have some audio from that. We'll see if we can use some of that. Also, just a roundup and a sneak peek at what's going to be coming out Monday morning in some of the newspapers. The standard fare for All Things Reconsidered, John.
Well, run on, man. Well, you know, as this segment is usually somewhat of our housekeeping segment, coming up in feature shows, I do believe next weekend we will have Mr. Anthony Lowenstein on to repeat the lost interview that I did in the lost show. I'll have him right in here in the room with me, and we'll have that little discussion about the aspects of Hamas being elected into power in Palestine. And he's got some... We had a great discussion, and I'm really, really disappointed that it didn't make it to air, but we reckon we'll have an even better run a couple weeks later. And also, speaking of Anthony, we will, in the next couple of weeks, shortly after the 28th of February, we will air our first special of the Crick series of lectures that are happening down here, and it's on politics and current events. And Anthony's opening the thing with a thing on spinning us to war, Australia's media role into getting us into the Iraq conflict. And if you remember, one of the original guys who was pushing the WMD thing was an Australian reporter who was one of the first who ended up dead.
Oh, really? But
that should end up being, it's one of those really, really, really small forgotten facts. And I think Mike Malloy is one of the few people that seems to pull that one out from the nether regions of his brain, and I do believe Randy also speaks about it. I'll try and get some details on that, but I reckon Ant's spin on that will be awesome, will be absolutely awesome. And you can check out his new website at AnthonyLowenstein.com, which I just built for him and launched this week. And he's a great author, and his book will be out in August on Israel-Palestine. So I'm really, really looking forward to that, and we'll have one of those a month.
Fantastic. I know that we are going to be, obviously we'll be here again next week at the same bat time, same bat channel, or something like that. Something like that. But I do want to mention again, we are trying to build this program into so we can get John off the phone and me off the phone. If you'd like to donate or be a participant and take ownership of some of this content, you can do so by visiting fourthestateradio.com and check out the donation situation there.
I have some links to some of the things that we're looking to do and a little bit of an explanation of what's going on and how this will also, that gear will not only help this show, but it'll help us produce even more varied content that the rest of the mainstream media fails and still continues to fail to produce for the people that want it.
That's right. They really do. They really do.
Ben Birch's thing over there. Toss him a quarter while you toss us 50 cents this week.
There you go. Yeah, Ben Birch, this program is archived by Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He also archives over 5 million hours of progressive talk. And it's my understanding that you would have had to have been born in the year 1400 and something to listen to everything that's archived on that website. He was talking to me the other day, and he said he was copying a drive, 120 gigabytes of material that he was copying and putting on a new hard drive, I think a 300 gig or something like that. So
there's something like 8,000 gigabytes of bandwidth a month at the availability to listeners and those of us that have the pleasure of being on his site, and we still only utilize about 40% of it. And besides thanking Ben, we should also plug WDCX and the Last Radio Station, who also broadcast this program. If any of you guys ring in, you got to tell us that you're streaming over there, because I don't think we've actually had anyone yet to check in from either of those stations that I know of.
Yeah, well, you know, they will soon, I'm sure. I'm really glad that we're on those stations as well. A couple other little small plugs to shouts to Bob Kincaid. You can check out his show during the week, 7 to 10 hour Eastern Standard Time, by going to headonradio.com. And also tomorrow night we have also preceding All Things Reconsidered is the Grace and Rama Homebodies show. And you can get there by going to Rama. Homebodies.ramabahama.net. That's homebodies.ramabahama.net. And check out
I love that web address.
Isn't it great?
it just sounds happy, you know.
It really does, and it's a pretty happy show. They do they do baking and all kinds of neat stuff on radio, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, they try to lower their blood pressure on their show. We tend to raise ours a bit.
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of what makes Fourth Estate what it is, I suppose.
I reckon so. And also, big shout out to everybody who called up tonight. That's great. I'm loving this live thing with being able to have, you know, our friends like, you know, Peter and Arbor and Leicester rock up and tell us about what we're missing or something that, you know, another angle on things. And also just to show that people are sparked up about maybe forgotten issues, forgotten points of view. And, I mean, that's the whole time that we're here. So I reckon we're, you know, looking like we're just about out of time here. And as usual, everybody, thank you for joining us for this one. Every week it gets better and better. We have a great time, and we love having you ring us, write us, whatever it is. Stop by the blog, sign up, leave a comment. I'll try and get all these links up sometime this evening for everybody to check out the stories that we spoke about. And Bob, why don't you just take us out, man, and say g'day, Bruce.
G'day, Bruce.
All right. Take it home, Bob. Rock us out.
There's no such thing as a political prisoner. All prisoners are political prisoners. All trials in America.